I can't have three big things going on around the holidays. It's like Christmas and New Year's is enough. I don't need another.
You don't need the end of the world, too, and that's just before all that. That's ridiculous. That's
exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen!
Greg and I are unlike many people in the paranormal community. We have jobs. I literally was just drove home from work like 15 minutes ago. So
yeah,
I was sort of practicing.
I have to drive to work, so that's how it's going.
This may be the most haphazard year in review, folks, but in a way, it's perfect for the year that was 2012.
But the funny thing was, and the report it also says, when the police got there, everybody was running away from the scene of whatever it was. Like, is that because they all were involved and they thought the cops would bust them? Did they all see something they didn't want to talk about? Were they really leprechauns there? What the hell's going on? You know, the story is frustratingly inconclusive about what's going on. It may not be experiencing something. It's interacting with something. So it's a co-creation of whatever you think it should be, or your genetics or your upbringing or whatever thinks it should be, and what your brain is experiencing, and you trying to make sense of it. And if that's heaven, then it's heaven. Okay, that's interesting. You're scaring the crap out of me here in a lot of ways, but, you know, that's interesting.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 7. Happy New Year, my friends. Welcome to 2013. Goodbye and good riddance to 2012. It is time once again for our annual Year in Review special, featuring longtime friend of the program, Greg Bishop. This year, it is a nearly live edition of the show. We wanted to do a live program, but could not fit it into our busy schedules. Literally, Greg and I both only had 1 2-hour window on a Thursday afternoon to tape the show, so we really had to shoehorn this one in between our respective jobs. And over the course of this very organic conversation, we discuss a wealth of big and small stories from 2012, including the end of the Mayan calendar, the passing of Philip Coppens and Jim Moseley, the Baltic Sea UFO, the UFO revelations from Russia's Dmitry Medvedev, the National Atomic Testing Museum's Area 51 Symposium, the Melba Ketchum Bigfoot DNA story, Superstorm Sandy, the neurosurgeon NDE, leprechaun and goblin attacks in 2012, and Greg's reveal of the identity of notorious UFO figure, the Falcon. Along the way, we'll also discuss the state of UFO research in general, what we'd like to see change as far as ufology goes, and what may be coming on the horizon for a variety of paranormal genres. Altogether, it is an incredibly loose conversation where we recount some of the highlights, lowlights, and oddball moments of the past 12 months, bidding farewell to 2012 with the always entertaining Greg Bishop. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Greg Bishop, please allow me to provide you with a little background on him. Greg Bishop became interested in UFOs at a very early age. He has no idea why. In 1991, he co-founded a magazine entitled The Excluded Middle for the purpose of educating himself first, and secondly, passing on the new info to interested readers. How selfish. TEM was a journal of UFOs, conspiracy research, psychedelia, and new science, now online at excludedmiddle.com. Wake Up Down There, a collection of articles from the magazine, was published in the year 2000. Greg's writing has appeared in the LA Weekly, Fortean Times, UFO Magazine, and Magical Blend, among others, and in the book-length anthologies Conspiracy and Cyberculture, Zen and the Art of Close Encounters, Kooks, and You Are Being Lied To. His book Project Beta, published in 2005, was an attempt to set the record straight on the Paul Benowitz disinfo saga. His third and newest title, Weird California, was published in March of 2006. His podcast, Radio Mysterioso, can be heard on Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time at killradio.org. Interviews with fringe topic researchers and weird music are the usual fare. When not writing, Greg can be found in the southwestern deserts of the United States or flying his paraglider above vertiginous cliffs and mountains, sometimes with a propeller strapped to his back. Successful bribes include New Mexican cuisine, recordings of outsider music, rare contactee books, tickets to baseball games, and selected original artwork. His website is www.radiomysterioso.com. Pretty simple, all one word. Radio Mysterioso, spelled MISTERIOSO.com. Check it out. And with all that said, my friends, let's get down to business and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on January 3rd, 2013. Greg Bishop helps us close the book on 2012 and welcome in 2013 on BOA Audio Season 7. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to yet another annual tradition here on BOA Audio. It is the time where we put the past year to bed, look back on some of the more ridiculous and noteworthy stories of the year, and look ahead to the new year, sort of our crossing of the equator of time, if you will. And as always, our guest is the man behind Radio Mysterioso. He's also the author of the outstanding book Project Beta. If you have not read this one yet, folks, you have to go out and get your hands on it. It is fantastic. And he is padding his record here for most appearances ever on Banal of America. I'm talking about, of course, our good friend Greg Bishop. Welcome back to the show, Greg.
You have such a professional announcing style. I wish I could do that.
Well, I practice. I literally just, Greg and I are unlike many people in the paranormal community. We have jobs. I literally drove home from work like 15 minutes ago, so
yeah,
I was sort of practicing.
Yeah, I have to drive to work, so that's how it's going.
Yeah, we've shoehorned this in between our respective jobs, and this may be the most haphazard year in review, folks, but in a way, it's perfect for the year that was 2012. I mean, this was the year that everybody had their panties in a bunch over, and now it's come and gone, you know, with a whole bunch of foo-for-all and not much to it.
Well, that seems to happen. I called into Don Ecker's show. He had an end-of-the-world show on December, what was it, 21st or whatever it was?
You've already forgotten. I love it. Yeah. Yeah, December 21st.
I didn't remember beforehand, but he was having an end-of-the-world show, and somebody emailed me or messaged me on Facebook, I think some guy that's either a fan or his producer or something, and said, you know, call into the show. I was at work, and I called in. And they said, you know, you think the world's going to end? And I said, no. And they said, why not? And I said, how come every other prediction never came true? And this one is going to come true. I highly doubt it. And then I got shut out of the conversation after that because I didn't say anything really exciting and everybody was talking at once and I didn't follow the first, command of radio interview or radio guesting, actually, which is to be as rude as possible and interrupt as much as possible, because Otherwise you never get a word in.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I'm not saying that it's a dickish move or anything like that. It's just the way that when you have like a two or three whatever people on the radio at the same time, you have to just basically step on other people to get your word in. Otherwise you won't.
So. The same thing happened to me on Sunday when I called in a Radio Mysterioso. So don't feel bad. After 5 minutes, I'm like, why did I call in? I should have just kept listening. I really don't. I don't have anything to say. I just wanted to wish them happy
I'm glad
New
you
year.
Called in. We're checking in for the last show of the year, and you know, Adam actually asked. He said, "People call up and bust our chops."
That's why I did it. Yeah. So, I mean, 2012. I mean, in a way, I was really worried about not the world ending, but the paranormal community looking really shitty coming out of it. But somehow, I feel like we kind of made it through this without any further damage to the reputation of people interested in this.
So I guess that's a good
thing. Well, the reputation of people interested in this remains exactly the same with people that are into it, exactly the same with people that aren't.
Right, right. But I mean, you know, I figured we'd all be laughed at, but it only lasted, you know, a little bit.
Yeah, it has. I think it happens that way every single time. Everybody didn't think that, well, most people didn't think that anything like Bigfoot existed, and after the Bigfoot hoax a couple of years ago, I can't remember the guy's name involved with that.
Oh, Biscardi.
Biscardi. Huh?
Biscardi.
Yeah, Tim Biscardi, the guy with the frozen Bigfoot fur and mask in the freezer and all that. Everybody thought, oh, now nobody's going to take it seriously. It's like, nobody took it seriously before.
Right.
What difference does it make? Something, you know, you can, all the scandals and this and that and people in the community that get so worried about their reputation, they shouldn't. Because nobody cares. When they will care is when something unequivocal that makes the Bigfoot research community or UFO community irrelevant happens.
Well,
that happens, then they won't have to worry about it and nobody will listen to them anymore.
I thought it was interesting that,
although I don't think it will in either case.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting that, you know, not only is 2012 the cottage industry now gone, which is great, obviously, but our mutual friend Ken Thomas made a really interesting point that this was probably the last gasp of relevancy for the Mayan people. So if anything, their world ended.
Yeah.
You know, because no one's ever going to really talk about the Mayan. They're not going to be, like, on mainstream news ever again, probably, so.
No, not any more than they used to be.
Right.
Unless, you know, somebody uncovers a huge new lost city or something, no.
Well, that was kind of ironic in a way. It was like the Mayan calendar ended, and the relevancy of the Mayans ended with it.
He's right. That was the doomsday prediction, that nobody would care about them anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So that came true. But I thought, you know, that thankfully, like I said, the media didn't pick on us too much, and I thought they were kind of begrudgingly giving it some time of day, if you will. You know, they were like, well, these people do kind of think the world's going to end, so let's cover it a little bit because clearly, you know.
You know, it's good news on a slow day.
I guess so, yeah. I don't know about you, but it kind of blew a hole in my holiday season, though. I can't have three big things going on around the holidays. It's like Christmas and New Year's is enough. I don't need another.
You don't need the end of the world, too, and that's just before all that. That's ridiculous.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then, we had that, and then I have to go visit my parents on New Year's. It's a tradition, so I had to go there twice, too, and before that, call in Don's. Shit. This isn't making any sense. You can cut this part out. It's just, it was very busy and kind of headache inducing.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit annoying.
I don't think there's any need to cut it out because I think other people must feel the same way. It just was a huge monkey wrench in the middle of the holiday season that really I didn't need.
Yeah. Did you notice that there's a lot of people that saying that 2012 sucked?
The year?
Yeah, I didn't really. For me, it did as a news year with shootings and deaths and all that. Yeah, it kind of did suck.
Yeah, yeah, it was a shitty year. Like, you know, it was a shitty year, I guess, for the human race, maybe, or the American race. I mean, it's bad when you have two gruesome mass shootings in one year, especially that last one. That was just heartbreaking.
Yeah,
you know, again, it's like. Another thing that kind of just blew up the holidays, no pun intended, obviously. It was just, you know, who needs that? It's a huge downer, man.
Yeah, it reminded me of those Chechen rebels taking that theater hostage around Christmas a few years ago.
But, I mean, I don't know. I've seen it said that the year was sort of meh. Like, literally, that was the description. Sort of a meh, a blah year. I mean, I don't know. It was a mediocre year. It was not too bad, not too good. I had a fairly decent year,
but the rest of the world didn't. As opposed to 2001, I saw a T-shirt at the end of 2001 that said 2001 sucked. everybody felt that way, not the least because of 9/11, but all kinds of other shit. It was just kind of like the end of a sort of a shitty, not so great year, and that just made it worse. And everybody felt like crap all the way through the holiday season. It was a horrible tragedy, and yeah, it really did suck. To me, that was a sucky year for everybody involved.
Right.
This last year just seemed like kind of sucky as, as a ramp-up of tragedies. And then at the end of the year, I don't know what the hell was going on. Everybody felt like they had to die in the last two or three weeks of the year.
There's a lot of death at the end of the year. Yeah, it was weird. Yeah.
Yeah, like, what, Jack Klugman and who the hell else? Patty Page just died, I think, 2 days ago.
There was another actor who died on Christmas Eve. I forget his name now. An accomplished character actor. And, of course, Phil Coppins died right before the new year.
Phil Coppins, that was another one. I was like, that it wasn't out of left field because he was sick. But,
right.
But still, you know, I never met the guy. Wish I had. And Nick wrote up a nice little thing for him.
Yeah, that was a really tough one because I never met him either. And I never really even spoke with him. But he touched a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to jump right into the in memoriam part, but we're doing this organically, so
yeah,
it works.
Yeah.
But and yeah, I mean, it reminded me a lot of the Mac Tony's passing, because Mac was such an online presence and Phil was an online presence in a big way. You know, it was like, it was, you kind of can see the, you know, that he's part of this online community in a big way.
Yeah.
You really could see, like, on Facebook was just, you know, everybody was really broken up about it. And as I said, I mean, he seemed to have done some really good work. I didn't really...
I'm kind of glad I didn't know him that well, because I'd have been even more bummed out. The one thing that did bum me out is I was out of the country, and like a week before I came back, Jim Moseley died.
Right, yeah. I was going to ask you about that, because that's another guy that I never got around to really... I've read some of his stuff. But I never really got as into him as a lot of people who've been in the field for a much longer time. Seems like he was such a prominent player in the zine sort of. He was still doing the zine thing, even, you know, with his other stuff.
The last issue was Gorilla put up online by Tim Brigham and I think a couple other people. And it's around if you look it up. I was going to link to it. I haven't done that yet. I haven't even done a Jim Moseley, like, memorial show, but I'm going to have Tim Brigham on, who was a friend of Jim Moseley's for, like, I think 20, 30 years, since he was, like, a teenager. I met Jim Moseley in the 90s, like, 95 or 4, something like that, kind of late on in the Jim Moseley story, but I interviewed him for Excluded Biddle, and he'd never met me. I just exchanged a couple letters with him. I brought along a pair of Groucho glasses, and after the interview, he agreed to put them on so I could take a picture of Groucho glasses on. And he read to me that UFO is a bucket of shit poem, which has since been reposted and reprinted so many places. And after that, I saved every – and I really like, truly like Jim. He's a good person. Always really supportive to people that I'm supportive of. Didn't really, you know, he wouldn't really stand for any BS, but he wouldn't do it in a nasty way. He just kind of, he was kind of a trickster.
Right, right. I like this stuff a lot like that.
Right up my alley, you know.
Yeah.
So I got along real well with Jim, and I think over the years he wrote me something like 30 or 40 different letters, and I saved every single one of them. So I was going to write something up based on all the letters he'd sent me.
Nice, nice. Yeah, it's you know, it's too bad. It's spooky in a way. It seems like every year there's some titan that passes away, whether it's Bud Hopkins or John Keel or or Mac, who was well on his way to being a titan, and it seems like every year we lose, you know, a couple of really like critical players. So it's disappointing. Obviously, that's life, though. I mean, you know, it's you can't.
The thing, I'm nowhere near any kind of critical player anymore. So my life is safe.
Well, you put it that way, yeah, that's a good.
Well, you know what? Every time you hear somebody, this is a George Carlin joke. Every time somebody dies, you're like sitting, and I don't do this really, but maybe I do. You sit there and try to subtract the number of years you've got between your age and their age. It makes no sense whatsoever. You're like, how long have I got? How does that average out? It's like, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with lifestyle and happiness and health choices and genetics and all that stuff.
Yeah, and then luck. You know, you never know. You get hit by a bus. Just look what happened to John Mack, you know?
Yeah, stepping off a curb in England in the middle of the night.
Right. So
probably, you know, the guy was drunk, and then probably also Mack was looking the wrong direction because it's England.
I heard it happens all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I was in England when I was right after high school, and I was with this girl, and I had to grab her out of the street, and she almost got hit by a car.
Weird.
Well, they do everything backwards there. They're going to have to change everything so they're not hitting so many people from out of the country.
Yeah, stop hitting so many Americans.
Yeah, nailing so many Americans with their wacky traffic. I don't know. What other countries drive on the left side of the road?
I don't know. I was going to ask if Canada does, but I don't think so.
No, it doesn't. I think maybe Australia does, and like, well, maybe one of like Singapore or something. Other than that, I'm not sure.
Oh, weird. So, yeah, so we lost Jim Moseley and Phil Coppens. So, you know, thanks to them for their contributions. It's a sad, you know, sad loss.
As. And they're not going to revive Saucer Smear, which I actually think is a good idea.
Yeah, it was really his own sort of vision. I can't imagine, you know, I could see someone sort of doing something in that vein, but let it go with him.
Yeah, but don't call it Saucer Smear.
Right, right.
Because Tim Brigham called in the show after you, and he said, he actually said that, and this is the first I'd heard, because I thought they were planning on, he's like, because before he died, he was saying, well, you know, a couple of years ago, there's a succession of editors now in case I'm not around that will keep it going. And after he died, they just said, ah, screw it. We can't have this without Moseley. It just isn't Saucer Smear, so forget it.
Well,
and they're right.
Yeah, exactly. I will not carry on Radio Mysterioso if anything happens to you. Don't worry.
Oh, thanks.
I won't allow it. So, yeah, so aside from the, you know, and 1,000 apologies, of course, if we've missed anybody, who passed away. Those were the two big names that came to mind when I was putting these notes together. So I'm sure there's others.
I was trying to more, and if I haven't, I'm sorry.
That's pretty much what I was saying, too.
But Moseley, it affected me personally, and Coppens affected a lot of people I knew personally. So that those are the ones that come to mind, really.
Right, right. And then, you know, traditionally this is sort of our UFO roundup, but it's like, you know, and every year the UFO... It gets progressively darker as far as between the both of us.
Light bulb that's getting less and less energy put into it, and you can see it just starting to dim and dim and dim.
Right.
And I don't know what that is. I'm really hoping that means that MUFON and KUFOs and all those places just fall into disrepair and break, splinter into 1,000 groups. That would be wonderful.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I
hate them, but because I think they're irrelevant now because they're the fact of having a centralized repository for not information but more like dogma, a central dogma. I think that's exactly what the UFO problem wants, is just central dogmas controlling what, not controlling, but you know, basically stifling any creative thought on it, because that just means it won't be figured out, because the UFO phenomenon is far more creative than most of the people that study it, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Yeah, yeah. It was a year full of what you like to call, which I just cannot thank you enough for this fantastic term, UFO porn. I mean, there was lots of UFO porn. I mean, just a wealth of UFO porn. Like the kind you expect between the mattress of a teenage boy. Like that much UFO porn.
Yeah, I just, for the first time, saw that South Korean one the last couple of days. The one with that white thing that kind of goes along with the plane and then shoots up.
Okay, I didn't see that, but I did see one about a UFO that flew into a volcano. So
I've heard about that, but yeah. I didn't see it. And they're all, once again, here's some indistinct blobs flying around in front of video cameras.
Right, right.
The only impressive video I've ever seen, and I'm pretty sure it's not fake, was just one shot in Vegas in the 80s, just pointing north towards Nellis Air Force Base. And some people have probably seen it. I can't find it now. It's a picture of some little mountain north of Vegas and these little lights or something flying over this mountain, just over the top of it. And they've got that classic falling leaf insect motion.
Ah.
They're all flitting around, going up in the air, doing all these things that airplanes, birds, insects, none of those things do. They didn't move like any of those things.
Yeah.
And then they would float down like a leaf falling, like back and forth, that floating, falling leaf motion. Then they'd kind of regroup themselves and shoot back up in the air again.
Oh, weird. Yeah, you gotta
find that.
It's
one of the weirdest things I've ever seen, and that one affected me as, you know, that if, I don't know what genuine means, but it was a genuine unknown to me. I couldn't figure out what it was.
Now, did you look at the, have you, you must have heard about the Baltic Sea UFO. That was kind of one of the bigger stories. Some kind of underwater anomaly that was found.
Underwater? Did anything come out of that besides they went down and, like, used a sledgehammer to knock off pieces of it?
From what I see here in my top 10 list from Huffington Post, no. So there's been no positive identification of what's become known as the Baltic Sea UFO.
And it was made out of stone. It's not a rock UFO. It's just this strange anomalous round rock thing at the 300 feet underneath the ocean.
Right, right. It's interesting. I mean, at least it's unique in the sense that you usually don't see sort of these ideas of downed craft underwater. You would think that would be something you'd see more often, but
yeah.
Considering how huge the ocean is and all that, but. You know, again, it's like, what can we do with that?
I don't know. And the other thing is, I think somebody said they saw soot on some of the rocks as if there'd been fires burning in them or under them or something. So maybe it's some ritualistic complex that got submerged, like an Atlantean type of thing. Like that thing they found off the coast of Scotland. Was it called Doggerland, they're calling it? It's some civilization they found underwater off the north coast of Scotland, northeast coast, and it's got they found like apparently grave areas, burial areas, lots of signs of civilization over kind of a wide area that was progressively flooded between I think like 18,000 and 5,000 BC.
Oh wow!
And it's just another one of those, you know, quote-unquote Atlantean-type areas that are being found under the ocean, you know, all the time.
Interesting.
I like the name, Doggerland. It sounds like something from, sounds like some children's TV special. Doggerland, where all the doggies go. that's the name of it, and I saw a report on that, I think linked off that Huffington thing, or somewhere during the year I saw something on it. But I haven't heard anything about that recently either. I think it's fascinating. If you read some of these, like, ancient civilization books and stuff that I and you and almost everybody listening has been reading, you eventually come to the idea that there have been other civilizations on Earth, possibly many of them over and over again. I don't seriously doubt that at all. I think most people listening don't either.
Yeah, that seems pretty. It seems to make sense.
And advanced to a state where we would call them advanced, but not advanced in the technologically in the way we are, but more advanced, maybe in tune with the planet or
right.
The nature of the planet or the nature of physical features of it or something like that. I don't know how to put it any better than that.
Right, right. Well, there's this sort of idea too of a global society that we still haven't really wrapped our mind around, a historical global society.
Yeah, and maybe more than one.
Hmm.
Like, you know, this thing rose for a billion years and then was wiped out, and we don't, you know, there's no way we're going to find any evidence of it. And then the last one that was around, maybe we find little bits and pieces of it here and there.
Right, right. It's entirely possible that's where the UFOs come from. They left and they come back and they're like, no, we were here like a million, you know, billions of years ago before you guys even came around.
So. Yeah, I think I mentioned this on your show before, but there was this Alan Watts lecture that I always go back to, if you know who he is.
Yeah.
He said maybe the natural order of things is that rocks eventually turn into people.
Interesting.
You know, aliens
yeah.
come around and they say, well, there's nothing here but rocks. And then they come back like 3 billion years later and they say, wait, there's people moving around. And
yeah.
they go to another planet and the same thing happens. So maybe that's the natural progression of rocks.
Interesting.
Is that they eventually turn into something that has consciousness. And if you want to ascribe some intelligent design or, you know, divine inspiration or being to that, go right ahead and do it. But maybe that's the natural anti-entropic state of matter in some cases to become aware of itself by living.
Interesting. I never even heard of that idea, but it's, you know.
That's been sticking with me for a long time, ever since I heard him make that statement. I was like, well, if you want to assign a physical, I mean, a non-physical humanoid being to that process, that's fine, but maybe I won't take it any further than that.
Yeah, Well, if you know, that goes back to the whole biblical concept of breathing life into clay and all that.
Yeah, so it could exactly. Be, you know. Maybe that's another form of that. It's like the UFO thing or anything like that that's slightly unknown to people. It's brought down to the human level so people can understand it. And then at a certain point, people stop thinking of it, you know, stop realizing it's a metaphor and they think it actually happened. I think it's more like a metaphor.
Now, what did you think of, I'm looking at it, just the alien put down like 4 UFO stories that even sort of got onto my radar. I don't know if you had any, but this Russian vice president.
Too, but there are hardly any because, you know, we've talked about this.
Yeah.
People have gotten mad about it, too. Are we finally bored with UFOs? You guys are such assholes. Why do you say you're bored with UFOs? Okay, tell us why we should be excited. Go ahead.
Right. Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, here we are, the end of 2012. It's 2013 now. It just started, and, you know, there was no signature case that even came out of the year. So we got another year in the books without a signature case.
Not that I can think of, no.
You know?
Didn't you or somebody tell me that Stan Friedman said this year's MUFON was uninspiring or something like that?
Something along those lines. I don't want to... I can't directly quote him off the top of my head, but he was not particularly thrilled.
Maybe it wasn't
it.
Stan, but I'd believe whoever said that.
Yeah. It was, yeah, he mentioned, it was Stan, he mentioned it on the Christmas show. So he said something along the lines of, that I think something that it could have been done better or something. So I'm not sure what's going on with MUFON, but there wasn't any signature case, even though there's allegedly hundreds of UFO sightings all the time.
I hope it's devolving into, splinter groups. I really do.
I think it's just, yeah, probably. There's just no need really for, I mean, I just don't see the need for a UFO group per se anymore.
Yeah, you know, somebody like Jeffrey Gonzalez from Central California, the Bigfoot guy, should lead a little group, and Micah Hanks should lead a little group, and Albert Rosales should lead a little group, and Rosemary Ellen Guiley should lead a little group, and these groups should all have their own little agendas and communicate with each other and see what comes out of it. You know, the more democratization, the more chance we have for creativity and ideas, I think.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I can't speak too much to MUFON, but based on my scant dealings with people in that group, it's like, it just feels really too political. And too, you know, it feels like everyone's sort of angling to move up the proverbial ladder of MUFON, where it's like, okay, now I want to be an investigator or whatever. Okay, so I'm going to take the test and everything, but I really want to be the state section director. And then it's like, you know, I'm sure amongst all the state section directors, it's like they're all sort of angling to see who can be the next director of MUFON. You know what I mean? It's like everybody sort of just wants to get some kind of
wow. Do they even
role.
Really shit about the phenomenon itself? I don't know.
I think at some point it does become that. Yeah, I think at some point it's like the phenomenon becomes secondary to whether or not you're going to, you know, get to be treasurer or move on. It's like student council. Just the dealings that I've had with people.
I am not putting down the people of MUFON per se.
No.
I am tired of the organization of MUFON or KUFOs or British UFO. I think Bufora went out of business.
I think it did, yeah. I'm not sure about
But I think they stopped publishing Flying Saucer a while ago. Probably one of the best journals of any UFO group ever, except for the IFSB that Albert Bender ran. If you ever see any of his old newsletters, those are wonderful.
Well, it's a whole different area. I mean, you don't really need even I think ufology's the organizational aspect of ufology's had a hard time transitioning to the internet age.
It has, and I think it should embrace it completely, and it involves becoming ever more splintered, democratic, and horizontal, rather than, you know, vertical, leader-driven, and centralized.
Right. Now, did you see, this may have been the end of last year, but I think it was this year, now last year, 2012, could have been the end of 2011, but they... You know, the head of MUFON went on The Daily Show, and they completely savaged him and lampooned him and really just destroyed him. The former head, he's no longer the head of MUFON anymore. But
yeah,
it was embarrassing.
I think I heard about that. I can't remember who it was. It just,
I think the big thing was like that
the host tore him apart, right? Not they didn't have somebody on with him, did they?
No. They had like someone interviewing him and sort of leading him in by asking him ridiculous questions.
Yeah.
And like the gist of it was that China's got the leg up on UFO sightings against us. And it was like, oh, now we got to worry about China's taking all the UFOs now, too.
God, I wish they interviewed me. I would have said, fine, they're not going to figure out anything either.
Now, speaking of international stuff.
You've been allowing us to make fun of you, so this isn't going to be aired.
What's that?
If I was on with that show, I don't know why the person was so clueless as to what kind of show it was.
I think they like any publicity is good publicity. I don't know what. Yeah, I don't get.
Well, that's what kook organizations are like.
Exactly. Well, hey, if the shoe fits.
Everybody's complaining about the Westboro Baptist Church. Ignore them. You know.
Exactly.
Those people want attention so bad. Any group with an incredibly strong agenda and not really any check on a reality check, they don't. You're exactly right. The publicity is more important than being laughed at, or the chance of being laughed at.
Now, to get it back on sort of talking about some of this stuff that did happen in 2012, what about this, what about the Russian vice president story? You must have heard about that one. Dmitry Medvedev, he said sort of off the record, off the cuff, said something like that if he became president, they would brief him on UFOs and suggested that people check out some, not the Men in Black movies, but some real UFO documentary about Men in Black. And there was, you know, some debate over whether he was joking or whether he was serious, and a lot of people, you know, went a little crazy about it and got excited, but
about it.
What's that?
I didn't. I heard about it, and then I kind of dropped it, although that Men in Black aspect, was he ever involved with the KGB?
Maybe. Yeah, he's Putin's number two, so I assume he must have had some connection.
And nobody wants to be number two, because we all know what that is.
Exactly.
if he was with the KGB, then I would totally expect him to say something like that.
Yeah.
It just reminds you, and I realize this every day practically, that there's, probably most people realize this after they get a little bit further along in, you know, their experience of media and all that, is that the story is never what you hear. That's like maybe whatever you hear publicly is probably somewhere between 5% and 10% of what the hell happened.
So what do you mean by that with regards to this?
He knows. Or, you know, if the guy's, my suggestion is that with this guy, the Russian guy who's Mendelev, whatever his name is.
Yeah, Medvedev.
Medvedev? sounds like English backwards. That's why Russians and Americans never got along. My suggestion by saying this in a roundabout way is that I think the reason he says something like that is, one, so that he doesn't have to come right out and say what he thinks. Two, so that the right people listening know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And three, I mean, if you take some of his hints in the right way, you can find out a little bit of what he's talking about, because he can't say it directly.
Right.
Or the fourth possibility, he's just nuts.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think he's totally nuts. I think, you know, it's a
he's probably teasing some
thing.
Stuff out.
But I was about to leave my flying lessons the other day, and my instructor and another instructor were sitting there. I for some reason, I just turned to them and I said, "Hey, you guys remember that drone that supposedly Iran like took over the software on it or something, and took over control of it and landed and captured this American spy drone?"
Yeah.
And I said, "What do you guys think of the possibility that maybe that was planned?" And they said, "We hadn't really thought of that." Because I was thinking about it, it's like, what, you know, they could have captured it, but it sounds so stupid. We took over the programming and got it. You know how hard it would be to do that? I think the United States, and the other thing is, remember Obama said, "Could you please give that plane back?" And they said, "Are you kidding? No way."
Yeah, exactly.
That was the end of it. That was the whole news story.
Right.
You know, if it was that important, I think the United States would have just come in and, like, grabbed it or blown up the place they were storing it or something.
Right.
But I never heard about it. But the fact that it's in the news and that the reaction of the United States government was, "Please give it back. No, we're not going to. Oh, okay." I have a feeling if that thing was was sort of accidentally on purpose landed somewhere, and the Iraqis were, I mean, I'm sorry, the Iranians were made to think that they had done that, or that's the story they came out with.
Now, in your, in that...
BS in there to make them think that there's something going, you know, to lead them a whole, down a whole bunch of dark, I mean, erroneous, trails of erroneous information.
Basically, right, right,
big
right.
Fat decoy.
Interesting, interesting.
That's my thought. Because in World War II, there's a story in the book Bodyguard of Lies, whereby the Allies put together this incredibly intricate device, but it didn't do anything.
Hmm.
And they left a few of them on the beach, like in Denmark or something like that, and let the Nazis find it. So they just wasted a bunch of time trying to figure out what it was, and it didn't do anything.
Interesting.
They just wanted them to waste all their resources trying to figure it out.
Not a bad idea. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's possible then.
You know, and who knows, maybe the thing has viruses in it that will infect their software there. Who knows? Or it's got surveillance in it to take pictures of whatever the Iranians are doing. I don't know. But that's a fantasy I had the other day, and I said, well, what do you think of that? And they said, we hadn't thought of that.
Well, I mean, I've been accused on this show of being ethnocentric and xenophobic, I guess, which I'm not. But when it comes to these stories, I mean, if the Russian vice president's saying something like that, that I don't even think that even really made a dent in the news here. It's like, it's not me. It's the Americans that are xenophobic and ethnocentric. So it's like nothing, no big UFO revelation, unless it's a straight out-and-out UFOs are real situation. I can't imagine it's even going to get any further in America.
No, it doesn't. I mean, maybe that's the other thing. Maybe the guy put a UFO spin on it just to alert certain people to something he was saying publicly.
Yeah,
odd. Like I said, I think that's what the Serpo thing was too. It was a bunch of messages being passed back and forth under the guise of being reports about some planet called Serpo.
That's another one you never hear anything about anymore.
No, you don't, because it never really amounted to anything. And I think it was somebody's aborted attempt to, you know, create some kind of buzz on some story, but then also had the added, whatever, ancillary bonus effect of being able to pass messages about certain things back and forth through public channels to certain people, I guess. I mean, that's what I heard, and that's my model of it. Somebody called into Don Ecker's show, and they said they thought I was going to say that 2012 was a big... intelligence ploy by all of Bill Moore's friends. I don't know where that came from. It's probably because I think that everything's an intelligence operation.
Well, you're probably more right than you are wrong in all of that then, because
well,
I think so.
I'm not dramatic about it. I think it's interesting.
Well, a lot of people just don't consider it, I think. A lot of people don't, they don't want to, you know...
I was talking to a defense-related person the other day, who, that's as far as I'll go, and he said, we were talking about the Baumgartner, if you want to talk about the 2012, about the guy that jumped from the balloon.
Yeah.
Felix Baumgartner, and he says, well, the defense industry is involved in that, I'm pretty sure. I said, why? It's just Red Bull. And he said, no, there's a lot of data coming from that thing that it'd be really helpful to a lot of defense contractors.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of these things you see, like the Virgin space plane stuff and all that, have defense contractors kind of with their fingers in it, you know, money-wise and information-wise and all that, because they can get, you know, if they throw some money and some expertise at it, they can get some cheap information back that they didn't have to, you know, spend money on themselves.
Well, in the big picture of things, too, it's like... Looking at, like I said, I mean, there's all this UFO porn from the last year, and it's it feels like, I mean, I've talked about the stagnation of ufology on the show a lot and with people on the program and everything, and to take that sort of idea one step further, I mean, you look at the big stories of the year, you get this sense of, like, desperation coming from the UFO research community and UFO fans, if you will. I don't want to call them... Or whatever people, I forget what the derivative, derogatory term for UFO.
For UFO buffs. Enthusiasts?
Yeah, yeah. The buffs.
I'm one.
But I get a sense almost of desperation where it's like anything that that is UFO related. It's like they just jump on it and they're like just sort of just drive it into the ground of, you know, that this is important. And because nothing really of solid use is coming out. Nothing, you know, there's no, like I said, there was no signature case. There was no really big breakthrough. I mean, we didn't have some whistleblower, you know, like Jimmy Carter didn't come out and say, you know, that UFO, that he was, you know, stonewalled about UFOs or anything like that. So we
had a few. I mean, there was, oh God, what was, Chase Brandon, the CIA guy.
Yeah, I have that in the notes, yeah.
Said that he saw something about Roswell in a drawer in a file at the CIA. And there was that other guy, Richard French or something like that.
Yeah.
He said that he'd seen he was in the Air Force and Army Air Force and then the Air Force after World War II, and that he had heard that there were two crashes and they were brought down by magnetic pulse weapons. They had that. Oh, there was that conference in Nevada at the Atomic Test Museum.
That was interesting that they would even have that. That was probably the only really, you know, interesting part. It's like, why would they be doing that?
I'm not exactly sure why they did it, although they had people on there that you don't. It's like, this is, I read a story about it, and it's like, this is an international who's who of UFO researchers. No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was a United States who's who of people you never hear from. That's what was interesting. Do you ever hear from Colonel Robert Friend? No. He ran Blue Book for a while, was communicating with J. Allen Hynek. I think Bob Emmenegger talked about that guy on my show. I think he's friends with him, actually, when he was doing his documentary, UFOs Past, Present, and Future, in the late 70s. That guy spoke there, and Robert Friend, Bill Coleman, who's another person that's involved in kind of back channel UFO information. Check out Grant Cameron's site. He has a lot on these guys.
Yeah.
And Alexander was there, you know, providing some sort of support. And then Nick Pope for some strange reason. Not that I like Nick and he's a smart guy and I think he is.
Probably to add to the international.
I don't know why they had him at a thing. At the Atomic Test Museum near Area 51 in Las Vegas. That seemed kind of weird. But I wasn't there, and I didn't hear what he talked about. So I really wanted to go to that thing when I heard about it. I just couldn't. One of the few things I actually did want to go to, because those guys, you never hear from them.
Right, right.
Like John Alexander a bit, but not, you know, Bill Coleman and Robert Friend and Charles Holt, too, actually, the Ben Waters guy.
Who put that together? Just someone in that?
So someone at that museum, I think, there may be a lot more of the backstory than I know.
Yeah, see, that would be interesting, the backstory of why and how they, you know, how they came to determine these names, if you will.
Yeah, I've got this weird suspicion that Alexander, they got a hold of him and he suggested them. John Alexander suggested these guys because it would seem like he would be the kind of person that would suggest them because they're not obvious at all.
Right, right. I mean, if we were talking, if there was some person interested in UFOs, I mean, we'd see like Friedman, Rich Dolan, and people like that.
Yeah, you know, if you're putting together a UFO conference or a bunch of UFO speakers, these guys never show up. They're never invited, except possibly Alexander and Charles Holt and Pope. But these two other guys, you know, almost half the speakers, nobody ever hears from them. I'm surprised they showed up, but I wonder if they have tapes of what they said for sale. Next time in Vegas, I had to go there and find out.
Yeah, well, it says there's an exhibit there now, so.
Yeah, it's an Area 51 exhibit. I don't know if it's semi-permanent. A friend of mine at work went to it. He said it was really silly. But I want to go see it in my perspective and see what I could make out of it.
It could also be, you know, it's the National Atomic Testing Museum. It could just be, you know, shit, no one comes to our museum. You know, no one. How can we get more people through the doors here? Let's add a UFO thing.
Sure, it's a publicity stunt too. You're right.
So it could just be that sort of thing. But I mean, to get back to, I mean, what do you think of that idea that the UFO fandom is sort of grasping at straws here, in a sense?
Well, I think it is because nothing new's come along. How did you get that feeling from all the people you've been interviewing in the past year?
About the grasping at straws or the stagnation?
Both.
I felt the stagnation myself, personally, just that, that we haven't seen anything in the last few years. It's kind of come up in conversations with you and me, and previously when we would have Nick on these shows, there wasn't really anything, because we have these conversations all the time, where it's like,
yeah,
you know, why is this, why do we have nothing? There was like one good year, the years we've been doing this. And I think that was the Stephenville year, where there was a few different breakthrough moments.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, like, last year was the year everybody got mad, because they were like, we don't care.
Right. No, that was 2 years
we
ago. Last year we defended against that.
Didn't care. I didn't care about a lot of this stuff. I mean, it was interesting, I guess, but it didn't change the game. It didn't change my mind. It didn't make anybody outside the field really care to notice. So, you know, no, it wasn't that interesting. I feel like this year's a little better because we're not trying to say, well, what happened this year and what do we think about it? We're just kind of jumping around, which I think is a little bit better. That's why I do stuff on my show, especially if I think it's not going well, I just start jumping around. What movies did you like? You know.
Right,
like.
Right. Well, we're sort of reminiscing about things we remember from the year. It's hard even, you know. I mean, I somewhat follow the paranormal field. Obviously, I follow all the different fields. And it's like, you know, it was almost more of a year. It was really, you know, more of a year of interesting Bigfoot news than UFO stuff. It's just kind of weird.
Oh, like that Bigfoot DNA thing with the Ketchum or somebody like that, the veterinarian in Texas.
Right. I thought that was really interesting.
They found, I guess she went and compared hair, blood, whatever, all these biological samples from a bunch of different Bigfoot researchers or collectors or something, just researchers that found this stuff, and she and her team seemed to think it's some sort of hybrid hominid DNA, and
right.
Nobody else has been able to replicate it yet, probably because they don't have access to the samples, which is kind of stupid. Everybody should have full access to all these things so they can start replicating it.
Right, right. I thought that was interesting. And I think it's interesting as more of that sort of stuff happens that they turn to the genetics aspect of it, you know. I know Lloyd Pye's still plugging away at the Star Child skull and the DNA part of that whole thing. So
he announced that it really is alien DNA, which
I believe
I
so, yeah.
If something was alien DNA, but
yeah. He had some revelations that it is non-human or something like that. So
Well, Jesus, do you think he'd ever say anything different?
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying he's a hoaxer. It's just one of those things where you've got something. It's become part of who you are, and to just say that, oh no, it's inconclusive and it's nothing. You can't do that.
Right. Right.
You know, because that thing is so important to him. So who knows? Maybe he came out with some incontrovertible evidence that is being covered up that the thing is actually alien, but. I personally doubt it, but, you know, I'd have to know more about it than to just come out and say the guy's full of crap, because I don't know if he is or not. I have a feeling that it's just the elongated skull of somebody like that group they found in Mexico recently that just had the elongated skulls from being elongated, not because they're aliens.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it says here, Lloyd Pye announces startling genetic evidence that Star Child skull is alien. So...
Well, I would like to know what his startling evidence is.
DNA.
Okay.
I don't know. That's all I've got for you.
Well, see, there's a two-sided coin here. One is that if it was, you know, if it really is, you know, it might not be alien DNA or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The point is that if it is, it would be so ridiculous to the mainstream that they really wouldn't care or take a look at it anyway.
Right, and what's the mainstream really going to do with it?
I don't know. I mean, it might be covered up or made irrelevant or whatever. But, yeah, exactly. What are they going to do with it? Because it comes from such a lineage of people not believing it for so long. Why should they suddenly believe, you know, do 180? Because most people made their mind up on that kind of stuff and the Star Child skull and all that a long time ago, if they even hear of it.
Well, you'd think, though, that if anything, that would be one that the mainstream would feel more comfortable with picking up, because it's like, all right, well, there's nothing really to worry about. It's a long-dead alien.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know how it got here or whatever, but apparently aliens are real. We only have the one, and it's dead. So,
For a long time. You know, what if Louis Leakey found it? Yeah, that might be a little different. He might have, a lot of scientists and geologists and archaeologists might have found all kinds of weird stuff and just said, well, this doesn't really fit in, so they just throw it in the back somewhere or throw it aside.
Right, I've heard that sort of idea with giants and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's an old idea. Keel brought it up. Jim Brandon in that book that I keep bringing up, Rebirth of Pan, brings it up. I think, who did the source book? William Corliss brings that up. He tries to find stuff that people actually did report but never really made any big deal about.
Right.
All his source book stuff, which people really should check out. I mean, if you want some Freudian porno, go get all those source book things. They're fascinating.
Interesting. I'll have to check these out. Who's the author again?
William Corliss, Corliss. I think he has a website, and you can get all. He's like Charles Fort reincarnated. He's collected all these. You know, he's got a book of weather anomalies and a book of archaeological anomalies and geological anomalies and just books and hundreds and hundreds of pages.
Now, on a broader scale, we'll move away a little bit of UFOs. We're just sort of looking at the year in general. I thought it was kind of interesting. It was looking at an article that was like a dozen or more futuristic events that actually happened in 2012 that had long been predicted. And, you know, a lot of them were sort of like technological type stuff, but I thought the one that was really interesting and has some resonance is the Superstorm. I said, you know, that now this was the first really like supermassive Superstorm. And of course, and even in the article, it was like predicted by Art Bell and Whitley Strieber in their book, Coming Global Superstorm. You know, now we have a superstorm that happened. So it was that was kind of
Andy?
Yeah. Because it covered like the whole East Coast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. I mean, maybe we are beyond the whole 2012 Mayan calendar thing. Maybe we are sort of on the precipice of some kind of awful global weather change.
Yeah, could be.
I mean, I do feel like that's happening. But it's slow. It,
of all the likelihoods of things, I think that climate change is one of the more likely ones. From whatever reason you want to ascribe it to, humans or whatever, or natural pulse of the planet, I don't know. But, yeah, it seems like that is changing. The other thing is I tend to think is if you read scientific journals, you can see a lot of – this is what apparently – who's that? Ed Dames used to do.
No.
Read scientific journals and then make these predictions based on, you know, frogs are going to be, there are going to be more frogs found with genetic variants and mutations. Like, well, that was in the scientific literature like 2 or 3 years before he even said anything about it.
Yeah.
So a lot of these things come from, and I don't know if I'm really accusing Art Bell and Whitley Strieber of this at all. It's just, I don't even know where they got their information because I never read the book. But a lot of scientific research never gets in the mainstream until they go viral somehow or something is confirmed or whatever. But a lot of this stuff is sitting there in the science journals waiting to become relevant. And I think that superstorm thing, I don't know, but maybe there's a some history of models predicting that this would happen too, or saying that it was going to be likely.
Right, right. But regardless of whether it was predicted or not, it did, you know, we may be on the cusp of this sort of, these things being more commonplace. I mean, that could be a game changer in a way.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, maybe that's, you know, that some people say that's the 2012 thing is a nodal point or a whatever, a beginning point of change of some nature, be it psychic, psychological, geological, or, you know, asteroid destroying us or whatever.
Well, speaking of the nodal change and all that, I mean, thankfully they've quieted down, but I noticed too, after December 21st, 2012, there was a small handful of real nutcase losers who were like acting as if something did happen. Acting as if they had some transformational shift. And it was like, would you get a life, dude? Nothing happened. Get over it. Like, thankfully, we haven't heard much more from them. But on Facebook, there was like 4 or 5 people that were like, I felt it. I'm way more in tune with you know, my inner fucking child or some shit. It was like, it was like, get out of here, man. Nothing happened. Just admit it. Get over it. Nothing happened. So,
well, maybe something did happen to them, but they're so primed for it, you know?
Right.
Walter, my friend Walter Bosley says this, and it makes sense to me. There's some things that are so personal that you can't really I don't think the 2012 thing falls into that category. But there's some anomalous experiences that are so personal that trying to prove it to other people is just ridiculous. It's useless.
Yeah.
They do not know what you're talking about, and they have no... you should have no expectation of them believing you until they go through it themselves. So you might as well just shut up about it.
All right. I don't believe them, though, still.
Or find a couple people that have had the same experience that you can share this with. Because if you go public with it, people just think you're nuts because they have no – basis to – what's the word? They can't empathize with you because they have no idea what you're talking about. So, that's not really tangentially related to the 2012 thing, but a lot of this stuff is a matter of perspective, a lot of the anomaly stuff. And it's hard to popularize something that only a small portion of the population has had experience with. It's fascinating to the rest of the population, but there's no way to describe it to them except as aliens from other planets or ghosts or whatever you want to experience of some sort of psychic, whatever. It's not readily reproducible for everybody, so it just remains on the fringe for now.
Yeah. Well, I've noticed here, I said before we started the show that I sort of surveyed people to suggest stuff that might come up, and this guy Marco, he mentions the Chase Brandon story, but what stood out to me is the final sentence of what he posts here, and he says, "I never really saw any major follow-up after the story broke," and that was almost the exact same words about the UFO underwater. It seems like there's never any follow-up to any of these stories.
Yeah.
You notice that?
Yeah.
It's frustrating, because we talk about them, we hit on these stories, and it's like, whatever happened with that? Nothing ever happens with this stuff.
Yeah, well, you can ascribe it to some sort of cover-up, which may be true. You can also ascribe it to whoever was doing something, made a big announcement, and then just couldn't get it together. Or the results were inconclusive or whatever.
It's frustrating.
Like those people that were supposed to go to Africa and look for the Mokele Mbembe dinosaur again for the 100th time. I don't know. They were supposed to go in June or July, and I never heard what happened to them either. So I don't, it's all this stuff becomes inconclusive, and then, it's just like any other piece of news at this point. It's exciting for 5 minutes, and then, if nothing else exciting happens with it, it just dies. I mean, what if they did come back with a dinosaur? Yeah, it'd be all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But I am fairly certain they won't. I'm fairly certain nobody's ever going to put a Bigfoot in a cage either, because I think it's paraphysical, not physical.
Oh, like it can leave the dimension somehow?
Yeah, that it's the only explanation I can think of for Bigfoot and a lot of cryptids, unless they, basically capture one, is that they, and this is not at all original, is that they exist for a while where we can see them physically. That's the only thing I can think of. That's the only thing that matches the evidence. That they only appear for a little while. If you want to call it a window or a dimensional thing or whatever, that's fine. But they're only physical in the way we can see them and experience them for the time that we see and experience them.
Right. I talked about this, I think. I forget with who, but the joke that I made, since they keep finding the scat, the Bigfoot scat, maybe Bigfoot just comes into our dimension to go to the bathroom.
And throw rocks at people.
Right. Well, wouldn't you, if you were going to the bathroom and someone was watching you? You'd be like, get out of here. I'm trying to take a crap.
When I went out in New Mexico at the Dulce Reservation with a couple people, I talked to one of the tribal members there, and he said that Bigfoot had been on his property. And I don't think he was an Indian playing jokes on white people. He said that the Bigfoot research people had come there, and people had rocks thrown at them at night. And it could have been Indians throwing rocks at them, I guess. I don't know, but he said he'd seen one on his property, and people have been seeing them there for years, and that's true. He didn't make that up. But, you know, nobody's ever able to catch one. Nobody ever finds one. It's like, well, how come they haven't found a dead one? Well, maybe they buried their dead. Well, surely, if there's that many, they should have found a grave or something at some point.
Nah.
No, because I don't – maybe not. But I also think it's because they're not physically present in the way we think they are.
Right.
Lauren Coleman and a lot of Bigfoot researchers think differently. They think it's a gigantopithecus or whatever it is. I'm not an expert. I don't know if anybody is, but – I don't think anybody's ever going to catch the Loch Ness Monster or Bigfoot or Chupacabras or any of these things, because you can't. It's kind of the same reason that cameras and stuff stop working when these things are around a lot of the time.
Right.
I don't know why that is, but that's just the way it is. It's almost like it's designed itself to be undetectable by us in the way that we would like to detect it.
Yeah, yeah. Believe me, I'm a huge Bigfoot fan. I wish they could capture one, but I've grown disenfranchised with the idea that they will.
Yeah, I don't think so. I want somebody to convince me that they will, but I haven't heard a good argument yet. You know, at some point I want to have Lauren Coleman on and just kind of have a debate with him about it. He's much, much, much more knowledgeable about that than I am, which is why I'd like to have him on and talk to him.
I mean, I would be thrilled if they captured the Bigfoot. That would probably be, like, the highlight of my life, one of them at least.
Yeah, be a highlight of a lot of people's lives because they finally have, you know, some sort of evidence. But I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. And I don't think that...
I put more possibility in
and all that, but
the creature down in Sumatra there, the Orang Pendek. I think that's just a rogue monkey that they'll eventually... capture probably on film.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think it's because that's just lurking around in the jungle and shit that no one can really get into and stuff. So yeah. It's entirely possible. I mean, I've talked to Adam Davies a lot about it, and it's like he's been in places in the Sumatran jungle that no people have ever been in.
Yeah.
It's like, well, shit, of course a little ape is going to be able to live in there. That if you were a little ape, wouldn't that be, you know, be the perfect place to live? So.
Yeah, to keep away from people that are trying to kill, capture, or whatever, do whatever to you.
Right. Giant apes, on the other hand, I think the Bigfoot, I think there's some paranormal element to it. I feel like there has to be.
Yeah, there's got to be. I mean, there's so many reports of weird things happening with Bigfoot that has nothing to do with some hairy hominid, like, you know, UFOs being in the area or... you know, I don't think I've ever heard of any disappearing before people's eyes, but, you know, they'll go behind a tree and then they won't be there anymore. It's like, what?
Right, or the tracks will just stop, like, at random when they couldn't stop at random. Like, well, how does that happen?
Yeah, I mentioned the other funny thing about Bigfoot, and I mentioned this on my show the other night, which I haven't posted, is that I went to see a couple years ago to see the news conference that guy Jeffrey Gonzalez with the Sanger Paranormal Society in Fresno, California had on the Bigfoot face print on the truck thing.
Yeah, somebody asked about that in the lead up here. Yeah,
and no, I haven't heard what's happened with that. He had the panel or the door taken off his truck and put like in cold storage for later, and then had the door. I don't know if there's. I'd write to him and find out if anything came of it. But, you know, the news conference was fun, and, you know, they presented a bunch of sort of inconclusive evidence that was possibly exciting, but possibly not. They're trying to be very careful, especially in light of the Biscardi thing.
Right, right.
But the interesting thing was to me that afterwards, one of the guys that hung out with him that, you know, that was in the mountains when this thing happened, when they left and then came back and found the prints and stuff thrown all over the truck. I talked to him later and he said, people don't know this, but the Bigfoot, he said, there's a lot of Bigfoot researchers say that the Bigfoot, imitates and mocks people.
Yeah. I remember you saying that on your show. Yeah. Where it speaks, it can like sort of mimic a voice.
It will say you're like somebody else, like somebody will be, he said some guy was missing out of camp, like, you know, where's Bob or something. And in the middle of the night, they're going, where's Bob? And then out in the woods, they hear this guy, this voice going, where's Bob? Where's Bob? Where's Bob? Just imitating them, crashing around in the bushes.
That would be spookier than anything.
Yeah, that's more spooky than just, you know, screaming noises, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it'll, he said, it'll swear at you too. If you, he said, if somebody like comes in and starts bugging you at night, what's the first thing you're going to say? You're going to start swearing at them.
Yeah.
Like, F you. And he said, Bigfoot will say that back at you. Like a really super intelligent parrot that just repeats everything, repeats your words back to you.
Now, the one story that is beyond all this stuff that I thought was really interesting was the story of the neurosurgeon. Have you heard this? He had the near-death experience.
Have you heard about this? The one that says that heaven exists?
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was pretty interesting, at least because it comes from a neurosurgeon. You know, it's not just some... It has the scientific background to it. Now, I haven't looked in depth at his stuff, but, you know, I think that he's at least trying to make sense of what happened to him.
Yeah. I don't, you know, I'm not trying to put the guy down, but just because a message comes from a scientist doesn't mean that it's automatically, you know, true.
Right, right.
It means we might assign it some more relevance because the person has a little bit of a background where they think about things a little bit more deeply. And I read something about that, where a skeptical article about it, where the person, whoever wrote it, said, it's interesting, but it's inconclusive to most people because it's, there's just, you know, how can you reproduce that? And the fact that it ha- you know, people have reported such things for many years means that there's a state of mind where you experience something that people say is heaven. But we can't experience it on demand, really.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of people that say they've experienced hell, too, in the near-death experience. You know, not just heaven. So maybe both exist. And maybe it's like the UFO and paranormal thing to me, where your brain, however dead or inactive it is interacting with something. It's not it may not be experiencing something. It's interacting with something. So it's a co-creation of whatever you think it should be, or your genetics or your upbringing or whatever thinks it should be, and what your brain is experiencing, and you trying to make sense of it.
Hmm.
And if that's heaven, then it's heaven. I interviewed this guy like the second or third issue of Excluded Middle. He was an ophthalmologist. Dr. August Reeder was his name. He was at Cedars-Sinai. He had a near-death experience, and, you know, he had the thing with the light and the whole bit, you know, going towards the light.
Yeah.
And then he claimed, and this was an ophthalmologist, you know, eye doctor, credentialed eye doctor, working at a major medical facility, like a world-famous one, saying that he had a near-death experience. And then he said he reproduced it by holding his breath until he spontaneously popped into it again.
Wow, weird.
So I don't know what to make of that. And he didn't quite know either. He just said, look, according to my experience, the near-death experience is a real thing that happens to people. What fascinates me about it is that there's some, and I'm sure people listening have heard about this, is there's some studies where people leave, you know, they leave their body and they're kind of floating above it.
Yeah.
And they can see and hear everything, you know, that's going on. You know, there's plenty of studies to show that when people are knocked out, at least anesthetized, that surgeons there's a rule now, I think the surgeons and people in the operating room are not allowed to talk about the outcome of the operation or anything, because a lot of time people can hear that.
Yeah.
Whether they're aware of it or not, they subconsciously say, oh, this guy has no chance. You hear that, and when they wake up, they just figure they don't have any chance.
Right, right.
But the fascinating thing is when people can, you know, say that they left their body and then they went other places. Like one woman said that she died and then she went outside the window and like around the corner of the building to another part of the building, went in a window and saw some other stuff. But what she saw on the edge of the building, like on the window ledge, was a sneaker or a shoe.
Right.
It went and checked there later. And there, you know, it wasn't outside the window, and you couldn't see it from the street. You'd have to, like, open the window, stick your head out, and look.
Yeah, I've heard stories like that.
Yeah, and it's like, well, I guess she could have known about it, but, you know, that's not the only one. So people have access to information they shouldn't have when they're in a, quote-unquote, near-death state. And that's, to me, that's, you know, real strong evidence that there is such a thing as a near-death experience. And people do, quote-unquote, leave their bodies somehow, or their consciousness, their awareness, their personality, whatever, becomes detached from their physical body.
Pardon the interruption, but I'm Kevin Black of Stone. Tony, the Olympics actually started today. Do you have Olympic fever?
Tony Kornheiser, that depends. Would it make my groin itch?
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
That might be something else. You may want to let the doctor check that out.
I really like the Olympics.